Inside on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts with offices in Iowa and Nebraska. It's realestateconcepts.net. And Iowa Computer Repair. You want your computer to work? That's what they do. IowaComputerRepair.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. Grateful that you're hanging around with us today. Once again, you want to get a hold of us on Twitter. It's at IOB_NewsHour. With us in studio is a good friend. I mean, Mike Sherzan and I go back a couple of years now. And we met under some interesting conditions, and we've remained close in our phone calling and conversations. I think the other day we had a conversation that lasted about 45 minutes. Mike, welcome to the Business News Hour.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
You and I met in a political vein a couple of years ago, and let's talk about that for just a moment, if we can. Uh-huh. You were going to run. You were going to run for Congress.
I was a candidate for U.S. Congress here in the 3rd District.
Right. And then the primary came,
mm-hmm.
and then you weren't a candidate.
That's right.
And neither was my guy
candidate.
So,
that's right. Politics, you're not always a loser or not always a winner, but in my opinion, you're as long as you're trying and you're participating in the system, you're a winner.
Right. Yeah, I found that. And that's where we first met, and we saw each other often on the campaign. You know, it's the 16 counties in the 3rd Congressional District.
Mm-hmm.
My candidate was Desmond Adams, and you were running, and you had staff, and I was on Desmond's staff, and we'd run into each other all over the place.
Yep.
Shake hands and kiss babies and all that other kind of
exactly.
Was it shake babies and kiss hands? It was one of the two.
Whatever they prefer at that point in time.
You also took a look at running this time out, didn't you?
Yes, I actually announced withdrew. The funding issue became paramount to me, and that's why I decided to withdraw. I'm one of those people that have been fortunate to have some success in my life and with the help of a lot of people, and had some resources that I wanted to utilize to try to help people. I thought politics was and I still have. I grew up in a political family. I have two brothers that mm-hmm. worked in the state house, both of them serving as representatives. Matter of fact, I have a brother right now who's running for U.S. Senate
in
Arizona. And
wow. That's kind of a hotbed recently.
Yeah. Well, as of yesterday, it certainly seemed that way. Anyway, I have some background. My family has some background, and I thought, and I still believe, by being active in it, you can do some good and help people.
I think you're right. One of the things, Mike, that I wanted to ask you, and why I started with a political thing, and we're going to get into the business model and the success in business and your ideas with regard to what makes a successful business. But how is politics, running for Congress, much like business, or is it at all?
Well, I mean, any endeavor, if you intend to and plan to be successful at it, is about relationships. Relationships are built on the good ones anyway, are built on trust. And it's my opinion right now in the political world, and you, some say the business world, mm-hmm. you there are many people who lack that ability to be trusted or be trustworthy. And whatever success I've had in my lifetime, I've tried to understand what the needs of the person I'm communicating with or dealing with are, and I've tried to provide for those needs prior to my own interests, and that's really what it's all about. I have an attitude about government. Right now, the big argument is whether government should be run like business, or government is business. And I take a different version. I think a governmental partnership with businesses is probably the best we could hope for. And you can argue about what that means. But anyway, I've been lucky enough to have people help me succeed in business, been lucky enough to learn about business and how to create relationships and understand other people's motivations.
Well, let's get into the business side of this. Chairman and president and CEO of Broker-Dealer Financial Services Corporation. This is an investment group, right?
It is. The company actually goes back to 1979. It started originally up in Ankeny, and I acquired it back in 1991. I spent the first 10 years of my career in the 70s as a producer, a registered representative. You're required to have license. And,
right.
But then I bought the company back in 1990.
And let's let folks know what that is. What is the entity?
Well, in effect, what you're talking about, and this all grew out of the 30s, 20s and 30s, when we were coming through the Great Depression. They set up organizations and regulatory oversights, the Securities Exchange Commission, and then they set up an organization called NASD, National Association of Security Dealers. And in that group, member firms, they're called, created what is called broker-dealers, and ultimately what we call registered investment advisors. These are simply companies that provide advice and transactional support to people who invest in all sorts of markets, bond markets, stock markets, and they provide that support and education and helping people achieve their goals.
And there are numerous types of financial entities out there that do this. There are some fee-for-service organizations,
right,
and there are others that take it on a different level. Can you explain those?
Yeah. I mean, historically, the industry was based on what is known as a broker. And a broker is simply a person that is hired to conduct a transaction and get paid.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Most people are more familiar with the real estate world in which you pay a broker to sell your house. Well, in the securities industry, you're simply paying a broker to a commission to do a transaction for you. Now, that as opposed to what the modern version of that is, a fee-based advisor. And simply a fee-based advisor is somewhat of a spinoff on doing a transaction for a fee, but a fee-based advisor is getting paid a fee to provide you financial advice. And it may include transactions, but that's not ultimately what the objective is.
You know, and we kind of dovetail right back into politics on this one, because the Obama administration, towards the closing months of that administration, had put into place a ruling, if you will, or an executive order that indicated that folks that were doing that transactional-based conversations and making those financial pitches or decisions or financial help had to be doing so with the best interests of their clients.
Right. It's called
clients.
The DOL fiduciary rule.
Right.
And, you know, I always took the position this is a rule that specifically relates to retirement accounts. And most people who, in my opinion, conduct themselves appropriately in the industry or in any industry have the interest of their customer, their client in mind. Well, this simply made it into a rule because particularly connected to retirement accounts, ERISA-based right. accounts, because those are so important to people's lives and long-term welfare.
And so that was recently rescinded, if I understand.
Actually, it's put on delay.
Put on
they
delay
were first
the
to
yeah.
enact it in January of next year, and I think it's gone out now to 2019. There's question really ultimately whether it's going to be enacted
sure.
fully, but they have enacted some aspects of it, not all of them.
Mike Scherzan, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about successful businesses and his very successful business that he started and continued for a long period of time. And then you set up an ESOP, employee opportunity for them to buy
right.
you out.
Yeah, the mechanism really goes back to the 50s. This is simply where most people here locally are familiar with Hy-Vee that is employee-owned. But this is simply a way in which owners of a company can either transition their ownership to employees, a methodology in which they have the benefit of becoming owners and yet have some tax treatments that are favorable to that transition. So it's a great way where people can own a company, ultimately 100% of a company. And believe it or not, 100% owned ESOP company pays no federal income tax on their earnings.
Is that right?
Literally, if you think of it this way, each employee has an account.
Of course.
Similar
yeah.
like an IRA, and they just have shares that are continually building up over a period of years in that account, and they ultimately become all owners when you total all those up. But they don't pay income tax on that money until they take it out
oh,
when they retire.
We're talking with Mike Sherzan, ladies and gentlemen, about his business experience and how that has dovetailed from time to time into some political world. You sit on the board of the company, correct?
Yes. I'm the majority shareholder. I sit on the board, and I pay a lot of attention to it. So it's not – I can't call it a hobby, but I have very good people that are running it day to day, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to do other things. I'm also on other boards that I serve and enjoy. Some people call it retirement. I'm not sure what I call it.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do when you retire? You can only golf so many days a week.
That's
so
right.
How many states are you doing business in?
We actually are licensed in every state in the country and Puerto Rico. We carry about 35,000 clients on the books, and we close to $4 billion worth of customer assets with about 250 registered representatives.
And when the employees took over this business,
mm-hmm.
How did that work? I mean, how did – this is something you set up.
Yeah, it took me about 5 years to really understand ESOPs and fully appreciate the benefit of those. Ultimately, it's a transition. It's a cultural transition,
sure,
to make people feel like owners because they are owners.
I wanted to go back to general business questions,
okay,
for just a little bit. One of the things that we teased folks about that you were going to talk about, and we'll chat about those things, and you've already turned your hand on this, so you've already shared what you think is very important. Let's talk about setting up a business. What,
mm-hmm,
what are the three things that you think any business person, even not just setting up a business, but currently in business, what three things from your experience do they really need to focus on?
Well, the first one I would call the leapfrog theory. The leapfrog theory to me was you can't wait for somebody to provide you with the idea or the mechanism to set up a business. You have to be courageous.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is a very controlling thing. So you have to decide, this is what I want for my life. And those people that fear and continually do not want to take deal with risk are destined to not do very well in business. So,
I don't know of a single business owner that doesn't have those periods of time during their business where they don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, I wonder if I got enough money in the bank to make
right.
that next payment.
Well, my favorite story from back then when I started the company was I used to pay MasterCard with Visa. And to survive, you do what's necessary.
Right.
As long as it's ethical and legal, in my opinion, it's an even playing field. And that's the beauty of our system in this country, to be able to come to the front, take the risk, and reap the rewards. And you need a lot of people to help you do that. And where I get my kicks today is helping those people succeed because they help me. But that's the first thing. The second is know how to get along with people, know how to understand their
needs.
It
comes back to your relationship,
that's
comment,
right,
doesn't it?
Absolutely. And then the last item is be very specific as what you're trying to achieve. This is contrary to a lot of business school, but you don't even have to necessarily write it down. You have to have it in your head. What am I trying to do? How am I going to differentiate myself from other people to attract customers so that they'll pay me a profit? That's really the ultimate need that you have.
And if you have number two, which is that built-in concern of relationships, doing for them first what they need to
uh-huh.
have done, that kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many avenues that open up to you.
Yeah,
I'm an extremely lucky human being. I grew up on the East Side. I had a fortunate ability to education in this country, and I had a lot of people who allowed me to open those doors. But you have to take the step. Nobody is going to dictate to you that this is going to be the way to succeed. I think that's true in every profession, every endeavor. You have to be able to take risk to yourself and deal with it.
Yeah, and taking risk is sometimes that very scary thing, that very scary place. But if you don't do it, you never know. That's what the old adage, if you don't take a swing at the ball, you're never going to hit it.
Right, and failure is a lesson to me. I've failed probably more times than I've succeeded in my life.
Get out of here.
Well, thank you.
You certainly haven't failed at business. You haven't failed, I know, in your personal life. You're a great family, and it's really an honor to have you in here, Mike, and to talk about.
I'm the lucky one here.
About your thoughts relative to business and that whole. We had a restaurateur in not too very long ago, and he said the very same thing that you did. If you care about what your customers want first rather than what you think your customers ought to like, you're going to win.
Yeah. I think that's true in business and politics and life, in every endeavor, because that's how you expand your sphere of not only influence, but, you know, that thing we call happiness. It's odd. It's almost religious, but the more that you provide to people, the more that you help people, the better you feel about yourself and the better you succeed, in my opinion.
And that consistently turns over, I think. You know, people recognize that. And there are people that say, oh, you know, the guy's a gonif, he's a thief, and, you know, and he's going to, you know, he's going to look out after himself first. And then there's the other people that say, you know, that person really goes the extra mile to make sure that somebody else is taken care of first. Yeah. It's good stuff.
One thing I didn't mention, I can't minimize, is education. Get as much education in what you choose to do as you can. And that to me is a great differentiator in this country and in individual lives. Without education and my parents' support of my education, I would have never succeeded at what I did.
Yeah, that's true. Can that education be learned as you grow?
Well, I mean,
you're constantly learning.
Absolutely. Michelangelo says, "I'm still learning." That he said that. I'll say that to my dying day. You learn every day. There are ways to learn, either, you know, in the sense of going to school, or the ways to learn on the job or in your own life. So. You have to be a lifelong learner.
Got it. Mike Chrzan, ladies and gentlemen, spending some time with us talking about business success and a little bit of politics thrown in there at the same time. Good to see you again, my friend.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Anytime. This is an open mic for you.
All right.
Good to see you. Mike Chrzan, ladies and gentlemen, talking about his business. We will have links to all of that up on the radio blog so you can find out more. All right, we're going to have to duck aside, find out what happened today on Wall Street. We should ask Mike to hang around and
He's
say, okay, Mike.
60.
Yeah, I was down again today. We'll tell you why when the Business News Hour continues. You think you've lost your love?